That sound can mean only one thing. That's right. Time for another voyage, exploring the past, present, and future of the old Oregon country. Come aboard and get set to ply the waters of the Pacific Northwest, metaphorical and otherwise, on another thrilling episode of Cascade of History. And now, stumbling out of the cluttered purser's office of the SS Columbia, here's your host, Felix Bunnell.
This is Felix Bunnell with a bonus episode of Cascade of History, looking into the historic Masonic home of Washington. It's a sprawling, hotel-like complex built in the 1920s, south of Seattle in Des Moines, Washington, as a retirement home for Freemasons, that is, members of that fraternal organization. After many years of sitting empty on a prominent piece of land near Puget Sound along Marine View Drive South, it's likely that a demolition permit will be approved by the city of Des Moines later this week. The land and buildings are owned by a private developer called Zenith. My guest is Catherine Caffrey, Des Moines City Manager. We spoke on Tuesday, August 5th, 2025. Catherine Caffrey, City Manager for the City of Des Moines, Washington. And are you a Des Moines or a Des Moines person?
So when I was doing my job interview here, I was told I had to be a Des Moines person. But now that I'm here, I see more people say Des Moines. But yeah. I mean, you've started this off with the most controversial question there could be.
So. I'm sorry. And before we started rolling tape, I was just telling you how I'm not a bomb thrower, not a troublemaker.
I know. Look, you start with this. The most controversial.
Anyway, thanks for joining us for Cascade of History to talk about the Masonic home of Washington.
Yeah, happy to be here.
Yeah, I saw a notice in one of the newspapers or somewhere that there's a city council meeting on the 8th, which I think is Friday, and some action might
it's
be taken then.
On the 7th.
Oh, it's actually on the 7th.
Council,
okay.
Yeah, the council meeting is the evening of the 7th.
Okay.
But the action on the demolition permit will be made on the 8th simply because of kind of the legal, the schedule by which we make these decisions is prescribed.
Okay.
But we've tried to be as transparent as possible.
Sometime in the middle of the night on the 7th, after dark, when everyone's gone home, someone in dark hoods will come in robes down to City Hall and sign some with a quill pen. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. We're trying to avoid that. But yeah, that's how it's going to look for sure.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I don't mean to make light of this. For people who don't know where we're talking about, first of all, where is Des Moines or Des Moines? And what is this building that we're talking about today?
So Des Moines, Washington is in South King County. We are located on Puget Sound. So our entire city border borders the Sound, which is why the building you and I are talking about today is actually called Landmark on the Sound. And we're a community of about 35,000 people, kind of a bedroom community to Seattle. And yeah, that's a little bit about us.
Okay. And now this Masonic home, I think it was built back in the mid-1920s and functioned for something like 90 years as a retirement home for people in this fraternal organization. But then about 20 years ago, that started to change.
Well, I'm a little new to the community, but basically my understanding is that, yes, about 20 years ago, the Masons stopped using it. They put it up, and then between 2012 and 2019, they tried to sell it. And so they entertained multiple offers, none of which really worked out. And so eventually they sold the property in 2019. And prior to them selling it, they actually began the process of requesting a demolition permit. So then when the property was sold to a developer called Zenith Properties LLC, it's an offshoot of the developer Tarragon, that demo permit application sort of transferred to the new owner.
Okay. And in terms of the history of Des Moines, I mean, I've driven past the building a few times. I haven't spent a lot of time in that part of King County. I grew up in the Seattle area, so I've lived here my whole life. But in terms of the history of the community, where does that building sort of fit in terms of the bigger picture?
Yeah. So, like I said, I'm new to the community. I came here from out of state last November, but even having only been here, 8-9 months, I talk to residents frequently who have wonderful memories of the building. You know, either they had a, you know, grandparent who at some point was, you know, maybe a patient or kind of lived at the building, or I'll hear stories about people that went like trick-or-treating through the Masonic home, or there were different events. So there's a lot of fond memories. It's also, I mean, its name is, you know, totally correct. It is a landmark on the Sound in the sense that, you know, from the water, you easily see it. And, you know, it's, you know, it's a landmark in the community for sure, but it has been vacant now since about 2009.
And in terms of the plans that the developer has, they want to demolish the whole thing, every last little bit of it, right?
So they have put in an application to demo the permit and or to demo the building, excuse me. And so what that required then was the city to conduct, you know, an economic or an environmental impact statement that kind of looks at what is the environmental impact of that, especially through the lens of sort of its historic and cultural value.
Yeah.
So yes, their request is to demolish the entire building.
And so when the city council takes action on the 7th or the 8th or however that plays out, if they grant the permit, is there still a chance where they might say, you can tear down this part and this part, but we'd like you to leave this, or we'd like you to, is there any chance that they might mitigate the total demolition with some kind of preservation of some aspect of it? Can you talk about that at this point?
Sure. Well, the decision to demolish the building or not is not the city council's. The city council actually doesn't have any role in this. It's actually city administration. So, even though this is a huge building and one that is very well known, demo permits are really a very administrative function that happens through staff. So the staff will be making that decision and issuing that publicly on Friday. At the council meeting Thursday evening, though, we'll be providing the city council and really the community with a briefing on what is in this very dense EIS report, which really looks at, can the building be saved? What would it cost to save it? What else could it be used for? It looks at different scenarios. And for the scenario of demolishing the building, it does prescribe a certain amount of mitigation measures that if that was the, you know, path things went, that would need to be met by the developer. One of those, I mean, there's a whole list of them, right? Because it looks at the environmental impact, the impact of cultural resources, all sorts of things. But one of the requirements in there is that on site, the developer must locate a historical interpretation using some materials from the building, kind of honoring what the history of the site is. So that may turn into kind of a pocket park or a, you know, publicly accessible green space that has, you know, features of the building. That talk a little bit about the history there and the building as it was.
And when those mitigation things are determined or looked at as possibilities, is that something like a negotiation between city administration and representatives of Zenith, or is it more of a surprise for them on Thursday or Friday?
No. Well, so the report's already public and available. So the report that actually prescribes all the mitigation measures is publicly available, and in it, it prescribes the whole list. And so the developer has definitely seen those already. You know, this EIS report process has taken, 3 to 4 years, which is very lengthy for something like this. And so the report has been done and periodically updates are given to the developer. I don't think I would call it a negotiation because they don't really have any say as to what's in there or not. But they are definitely aware of what is in there and have seen it. The information as it's been drafted.
So when it comes to Thursday or Friday, will there be, I mean, what's your sense? Is this going to be like total demolition with the interpretation or interpretive panels or what, you know, whatever the mitigation, that aspect of it? Or is there any chance that some part of it, and again, I don't know the site that well. I looked at the maps. I see there's this decorative pump house and there are these different kitchens and things that were part of the picnic area and everything. Is there any sense to try to save some portion of it rather than, and kind of build, do the new develop? I assume they want to build new homes, single family and multifamily in the space once it's demolished?
Well, no, we don't know what they want to build. So the developer is not legally required to tell us what their plans are until they're ready to start trying to get permissions for those and, you know, go through the zoning process. So I think that's what's also made this so challenging for the community is that we don't know what they want to build there instead. The EIS report sort of looks at a couple of different scenarios. It looks at basically no action, which means allowing the building to just continue neglecting, which really is it being demolished just by nature. The building is in very poor shape. It's already deteriorating is what I'd say. The other things that the report looks at is, you know, adaptive reuse, which would mean preserving the building and then turning it into some other type of use. And what the report really goes into, and this was done by third-party consultants. It was done by a firm called ESA, which I bet you've come across before. They're one of the, you know, the biggest firms in the Pacific Northwest that does these sort of environmental reports for buildings like this. What the report looks at is sort of what it would cost to rehab that building and turn it into something, whether it's a hotel or condos or, you know, there's a couple other uses it looks at, but it sort of prescribes all that. And then the last option it looks at is demolishing the building and what would need to be done to mitigate that. I cannot tell you legally what the decision will be, but I think what I would say is that the report does not offer very promising news as it relates to preserving it. Financials of what it would take to rehab this building and turn it into something else, even if you developed all the land around it really densely, you know, the numbers that are in there are things like an apartment, you know, a single bedroom apartment to rent it would be over $10,000 a month, or hotel rates would be, you know, well over $1,000 a night, and things like that, that are just, I think, not financially feasible for a developer. And I also think obviously our market in South King County, you know, I don't see those numbers as being something that our market would sort of take. So I guess what I could say is, you know, we can't share what the decision on that demo permit will be until Friday. That is a very legally prescribed timing process.
Sure.
And the best thing we've tried to do is just be very transparent that, you know, when we look at that report, we don't find the conclusions very strong for reuse. We definitely find the report leading us more down a allowing the demo permit, which would be the whole building.
And I mean, is there an all, I mean, it sounds like the options are all or nothing. Is there anything in between that, as I said a moment ago, some of those discrete individual resources that are freestanding architecturally, you know, still on their own, still in not necessarily well-maintained condition, but still not demolishing themselves by time and neglect. Is there anything in between that might preserve some portion of what's there that would fit into whatever the future development plans were that Zenith has?
So the way the sort of application is put in, it was put in for the whole building. So what we have to do is look at what they applied for. We can't say, well, you know, you can do this, but not that. I mean, that we have to respond to the application we've been given, which is to demolish the whole building.
So you're not allowed within those parameters to say, yes, you can demolish, you know, 95% of it, but if you kept this historic pump house or this historic thing, that would, you know, pay some sort of respect to the history. It would let us be able to tell the preservationists that we're at least saving this, but it's so you can't, that can't be considered as part of the mitigation?
That is not in there as one of the recommended mitigation. And that may be due to the actual state of the building. The recommended mitigation, which, like I said, is publicly available in the report right now, goes through all sorts of things about, you know, environmental things and endangered species and all of that. But as it relates to really the preservation, it simply requires the on-site sort of historical interpretation installation is what it's called. But really, you know, I think it's a green space with elements from the building.
I mean, philosophically, I've always believed, or at least come to believe, I guess, as I've gotten older, that privately owned buildings with historic preservation, and not all of my historic preservation friends agree with me about this. I think it's a hard sell sometimes to make a private property owner be forced to do something they don't want to do around historic preservation. I get much more fired up about publicly owned buildings and, you know, public spaces and, you know, schools and fire stations and stadiums, things that are actually in the public sector, owned by the public sector already. But a place like this, where it's prominent location and it's part of the viewscape and it's part of the sort of, I don't know, it's a little bit hard to define in a concrete way, but there's it's sort of a, you see that and you know you're in Des Moines. You know, you kind of, it's got this visual clue that just, you don't even have to think about it. You know where you are. Philosophically, when, you know, you're the city manager for the city of Des Moines and you've got private property owners and you've got public property and you're kind of juggling all this stuff. Are we doing enough as our, you know, suburban cities or cities in King County that aren't Seattle? Are we doing enough to can think about viewscapes and think about quality of life beyond the publicly owned spaces? Because again, driving down, what is it, Marine View Drive? When this is gone, it's gonna look so different. Whatever Zenith puts in there, and I assume they'll be maximizing their investment with a mixture of, I don't know, multifamily, single family, who knows what? But I'm sure it'll look very different and, you know, very much filled in compared to the way it looks now. Does local government have a role in protecting those kinds of spaces or thinking about those kinds of spaces?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we do. And I think the good thing is that the state has the process. You know, the state prescribes the SEPA process, which really requires cities to go through things like this for structures like this. It's such a balancing act, though, between the benefit of the public and what and private property rights. And so this is, I think this is not a great analogy, but it, you know, really in the lens of an administrator, a demolition permit is like if you came in and said you want to demolish a deck on the back of your house. You know, if you're going to demolish that deck on the back of your house appropriately and, you know, do things correctly, we allow it. This is obviously a very different structure, but administratively, it's almost viewed the same way, right?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Private property owner who wants to do something. I think what I see when I look at this building is how long the history's been of entities looking at buying the building when it was for sale for that, like, you know, roughly 6, 7, 8 year period was for sale. And no one seemed to be able to do something that would, you know, quote unquote, make a pencil. Like I've had a lot of people ask me about McMenamins. They did look at the property and they passed. There have been other entities that looked at the property and wanted to turn it into a casino or who wanted to turn it into some type of single family housing or who wanted to turn it into live work units. And it seems like these entities have just never been able to make it financially work. And so without really the state of Washington stepping in or, you know, the national entity and somehow funding something like this, I think it's really hard for a small local government. We are a small bedroom community in South King County to think that we're going to somehow be able to absorb this cost. You know, that I got to think about what my taxpayers, you know, what their priorities are, because the cost, if the city were to try and somehow take this property, which we can't, it's not for sale.
Yeah, I understand.
Are really astronomical for a community like ours.
And what you said a minute ago about, you know, someone with a deck on the back of their house and someone with this prominent piece of property right in the viewscape, right in sort of the civic, what would you call it? Like it's kind of in the civic heart and soul of the, you know, maybe that's exaggerating, but it's right there in the, it sort of belongs, the view belongs to everybody right now. Mm-hmm. And
well, but not really, because nobody can go on the property. You know, it's been totally surrounded by a fence. So in many ways, I'd say no one's been enjoying or benefiting from that property in quite a few years.
No, I get that from like the actual, like, you know, on the ground, on the acreage and everything. But I mean, in terms of it, it's view, the viewscape from Marine View Drive, or just knowing it's there, or what it looks like looking across it from over. I mean, it's ill-defined, I guess. It's ill-defined in certainly in a legal sense. I think even in places like Seattle that have, you know, sometimes pretty robust historic preservation stuff or land use stuff that other times seems kind of toothless. But I don't think anybody's really tried to really get at what you were saying a moment ago, like the difference between the deck on the back of somebody's house being demolished versus this thing that's in the real, the view is in the public domain. I'm not being very articulate about what I'm trying to say. But
no, I hear what you're saying. Mm-hmm.
Do you think that should be different? I mean, should there be some mechanism that would, again, I with the whole property rights thing, I'm not like a extreme property rights person. I get the whole shared value of community and building codes, and I understand why we do things the way we do in jurisdictions. But when a place like this doesn't pencil out, is there something that's lost by the community members when the place like this goes away?
I mean, the city and myself included all hoped the Masonic home could be preserved. You know, I think at its height, it was a beautiful building. When you drive by, it is, you know, definitely something you see. And you're right. I mean, it is something that the community sees and is very, you know, iconic. But unfortunately, no public or private entity has come up with a viable plan for preservation. And so we have to respond to the applications that come to us and go through as thorough of a process as we possibly can. You know, we several years ago shared the draft environmental impact statement with the community, and we received, I think, over 700 comments from people. And the vast majority of them were about, well, can't you do X to preserve it? And so we actually conducted another, year and a half of analysis to sort of see like, okay, what if we did this? What if we did that? What if we did that? And it wasn't city staff doing that. It's, you know, experts in that field. So I think when all of that research is done, you know, it's the city has to respond to what it's been asked to do, right? You know, we've been asked to thoroughly look at this demo permit, to thoroughly look at, you know, the validity of what this request is from the developer. And that's what we've done.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we wish it could be preserved. I mean, it's a beautiful building, but no one has really stepped up. And here we are years down the road with that.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. Do you guys still, does the city of Des Moines still have a interlocal agreement with King County Landmarks?
I don't know. I don't know about that.
I know a lot of cities in King County, they don't have their own landmark program, but they contract with King County to do a landmarks commission and to review landmark nominations and that sort of thing. I think at some point Des Moines did, but I'm not positive what the status is of it now. One thing I noticed, there's a group that's trying to raise money online for a appeal, a legal appeal and everything. They're trying to raise something like $50,000.
Yes, like, I saw that. Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure the attorneys are excited. I don't know, you probably can't answer a question like this, but would it be better to avoid some kind of a protracted legal battle by like working with a community group if they had some way to get back to what I was saying earlier, preserve some portion of the property? But it's maybe that's totally outside the purview of what we're talking about based on what you're saying about what you were asked to do by the developer.
Yeah.
Is there some way to avoid the legal battle that might ensue?
I would love that.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting, though, is that if I were to, you know, if we deny the permit, we will absolutely be facing litigation from the developer, no doubt. And our outlook is not positive if we were to potentially take on some, you know, multimillion dollar lawsuit.
Yeah.
We don't have resources for that.
Yeah.
So it's a horrible situation because, kind of either way, the city's facing litigation. And that's just kind of how this is going, unfortunately. But we have to respond to the permit before us. So again, this is such a bad analogy because I would never call the deck on your house the same as, you know, this huge landmark building. But administratively, if you said, I've applied to get my deck demoed, and we said, well, those boards you can demo, but not those. Like, that's really not our administrative role. I mean, we have to review and respond to the applications that come to us as they come to us.
Well, then I guess what I was trying to ask earlier, should there be a different process? Should there be a different administrative process for the deck versus the very public large building that's still privately owned and everything, but it plays a different role than somebody's deck? Should there be a different process?
Sure. Well, and I guess I'm talking on both sides. Yeah, I guess there is, right? Because that's why we're doing this whole EIS process.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't take, thankfully, 3 to 4 years to review your deck permit. You know what I mean? So, I mean, we do have a different process for that. We do this extremely extensive EIS process that's had a lot of public engagement.
Yeah. I wonder, I mean, I don't know the answer to this question. Has Zenith done much in the way of like grassroots outreach or connecting with these community groups or in try to mitigate just before this decision, or are they pretty much kind of, they're not really connecting to the public? Any sense of that?
You know, I can't really respond to that.
Okay.
You know, I don't believe they've done a lot to date, but I don't really know. They're the right ones to handle that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that would be the one way to avoid the legal stuff would be for the Zenith and the citizens groups, you know, who are interested in preservation and you guys to all kind of just, or maybe not you guys, maybe just Zenith and the citizens working directly to come up with some kind of a something negotiated to have a, avoid the scorched earth part of it. So, and then just to confirm, what time is the city council meeting on Thursday and the decision on Friday would be what timing roughly?
So the city council meeting on Thursday is at 6 p.m. and we anticipate posting the decision on Friday sometime during the working hours. So our office hours are typically 8 to 4:30. So it will be posted. We'll also be issuing a press release. And, you know, this is a, you know, difficult situation, but we've tried to be as transparent as possible. So we will issue a press release. We will send things out to the community. We will post things on social media. I mean, we will be very upfront about the decision. And like I said, the most I can say is at this point, the report does not offer very positive news. So
I understand.
As opposed to preservation.
Is there public comment at the meeting on Thursday?
There is. And we anticipate quite a bit of public comment. Unfortunately, it is not a Q&A. So it's yeah. you know, we're happy to take the comments. We'll definitely write down all the questions we receive. But there is an appeal process. And so, you know, we won't be doing, especially because of how much litigation is expected, we won't be doing kind of on the fly Q&A with the public there. Our August 21st public meeting from 6:30 to 8:30 is a little bit different of a setting, right? So that's a community meeting we're holding on August 21st dedicated to talk about this topic.
Okay, very good. All right, well, Catherine Caffrey, City Manager for City of It's, again, you're a Des Moines or a Des Moines person? Tell me again, you're a...
I'm a Des Moines, but so you know, no S. now you're making half the city hate me.
So you're a no-S person, just Des Moines.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I'll say Des Moines. I don't get upset about it. Some people get feel real strongly.
Yeah, yeah, I think it goes back many, many decades. All right, thank you for joining us. Thanks for making time to talk about the Masonic Home of Washington in Des Moines here on Cascade of History. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you to Catherine Caffrey, City Manager for the City of Des Moines, Washington, for speaking with me for this bonus episode of Cascade of History. Cascade of History is broadcast live on Space 101.1 FM in Seattle and gallantly streams everywhere via space101fm.org most Sunday nights at 8 p.m. Pacific Time. Live broadcasts are posted as podcasts, as are frequent bonus episodes. Be sure to like our Facebook page for more information or visit cascadeofhistory.org. Subscribe to Cascade of History wherever you get podcasts. For Cascade of History, I'm Felix Bonnell. Sleep tight and best wishes.
That sound means the steamer Columbia has reached the end of another thrilling voyage around the Pacific Northwest. Be careful as you go ashore. Watch it, watch it. That's a slippery spot there. Ooh, I'll bet that hurt. When that whistle blows once again, be sure to meet us at the landing and be ready to climb aboard a little more carefully next time for Cascade of History. Cascade of History is produced in Seattle by Felix Bonnell.